Hello and welcome to our next session, IoT Frontends with Apache Flex by Christopher Dutz.
Hello, nice meeting all of you. Yeah, well, I hope a few people will continue to come. So I'm going to talk a little about IoT frontends built with Apache Flex and why I particularly think that Apache Flex is a really great project to do something like that. Most of you will probably have heard about projects that do it based on simple HTML or new projects usually doing some HTML5 JavaScript stuff. But I think Flex was always there and it's still great for IoT platforms. And I'm going to talk a little about that. First, a little about me. My name is Christopher Dutz. I'm a senior IT consultant for a company called Codecentric. The cool thing with them is I get one day per week that I can work on open source. So on Fridays, you'll probably see me sitting in office with my robot and teaching him fun tricks and stuff like that. So good place to work. I'm also an Apache member, part of the Apache Flex PMC. I am still the lead developer of the Flex Mojos project. That was the only Maven plugin able to build Flex applications. Dropped the ball on that a little bit because we're developing something new at Apache, but still in charge of that. And I'm a total open source enthusiast, so more than all of my time goes to Apache and open source. So what are we going to talk about? First of all, well, what do we need for a sensible IoT front-end, back-end thing? Then what parts of Apache Flex can help with these individual parts? Then I'm going to go a little into details why Flex is so great for this task. And then we'll have a little demo. And what I didn't add, in the end, I sort of have a little some impressions of what's actually inside the little buddy and the technical specs for the hardware I used. So, what do we need for such an IoT project? So I was thinking, yeah, I want to do something with IoT, and there are guys that love blinky lights, but I sort of love things that move, that do something. So I thought, I'll try building a little robot. And what do I need for all of this? Well, it would be nice if he could simply, if I talk to him and he simply answers. But yeah, well, not coming even close to that yet. But so I need a front end. So maybe my mobile phone with which I can remote control him. So what do I need? I need a server application that I can talk to. And I need clients that talk to this server. Then on the server, I need some logic that talks to the IoT devices. In that little robot, you can see there are 12 servos in there and two RGB color LEDs. So, well, generally, he's currently got blue eyes and that Borg light that's coming from the Raspberry. So you can control the motors. But he's also got a camera, and that's got a different protocol, and it's got a sound card in it that it can talk. The old version I had, it even had accelerometers and position sensors, but yeah, that sort of broke down on me in Vancouver miserably, so I took that part out. So what parts of Apache Flex can help with this? So on the server side, we have BlazeDS. Has anybody, just in the beginning, has anybody of you heard of Apache Flex? Okay. So probably you won't have heard of BlazeDS. Well, BlazeDS is the communication endpoint that I can run on my server. It's sort of like, yeah, Justin was talking about MQTT, so you have an MQTT server and your clients talk to that. Just think of BlazeDS being such a broker, but beyond that, you can execute code. You can do some sort of remote procedure calls on the server, but you also have some publish subscribe messaging. So that's one part on the server that we can use of the Apache Flex project. And well, what should I say, for the front end, the full stack Flex is just perfect for creating applications. So why is it so great for IoT? Well, as I said, on the server, I recently created, I did that a few weeks before going to the Vancouver Apache Con. So I created a BlazeDS Spring Boot starter. It automatically configures your BlazeDS server uses a project called Spring Flex that's part of the Spring project. Well, it is retired in the meanwhile, but it still works perfectly as a bridge between BlazeDS and Spring. So it integrates BlazeDS perfectly with Spring security and all the Spring messaging and stuff like that. And the cool thing is, in order to use that, all you have to do is add a dependency on the BlazeDS Spring Boot starter and create one text file. So as soon as it detects there's a meta-inf flex services config XML, it automatically sets up the BlazeDS server, configures it, and you're ready to go. You don't have to do anything more. BlazeDS, as I said, it allows server push. So Justin was talking about WebSockets. Well, we're using something called Streaming AMF, but we didn't give it a different name than the rest just because it was actually there about 10 years before WebSocket actually came across. So I call Streaming AMF, you can think of as the original WebSocket protocol, but it carries a binary JSON-like format that has some really good features in contrast to JSON. It's type safe, and it's even able to serialize cyclic object graphs. So if you have a person and that's in a group and the group has people in it, trying to serialize that with JSON is a really messy thing. With AMF, you just serialize it and it automatically detects, oh yeah, well I had that user already, so I'll just reference it. So, and in the end, you get the same object graph you put in on the server side. It's a really great thing. It allows remoting, so you can execute methods on the server. It has a publish subscribe mechanism, so it actually has a direct bridge, so you can sort of route messages from a JMS queue directly to the client. It handles serialization, deserialization automatically, and, well, as I said, it's strongly typed. Spring Flex, that was the integration thing between Flex and BlazeDS and the Spring framework. It makes a service on the server executable by just adding the @ remoting destination annotation to your service definition. As soon as you do that, you can call it. We could have done something that it simply exports every service on the server, but we thought that would be a really bad idea because you actually want to have fine-grained control on which servers are available from the outside. In contrast to, do you know Spring MVC or something like that, where you have to sort of define the controllers and you have to explicitly say, yeah, well, I want to, on that URL, please respond this way. Well, with Spring Flex, it's really easy. I have my simple Java service and I put that annotation on top and I can immediately start calling the methods of that service. As I said, it integrates with Spring messaging. So if you're using Spring messaging and sending events inside your application, you can route these messages down to the client. And it integrates with Spring security. So you can actually log on with your client. So you enter your credentials, you log in, and all the methods on the server are executed as the user that you logged in with. So that's a real cool thing. I've had a lot of problems with other approaches because you sort of have to reinvent the wheel over and over again. With this approach, all you have to do is log in and start working. On the client, I have to admit, I'm sort of a strange type of guy because I really like typed models and I like types. And when talking with all these JavaScript developers and whatever program languages are out there, all people are totally mad about typeless programming languages, but I really like to have my types. If I have a car object, I want to know what I can call on this, and I like it when my development environment suggests that I can open a door on a car object, and I don't have to sort of find out myself what types of methods this object supports. So with Flex, we have a strongly typed model. I usually have the client-side model auto-generated from my server-side model. So if I have an object that I want to use in the client, all I do is sort of have the Flex side generated from the Java side, and I just start using it. So whenever I add a new property to my server-side objects, all I have to do is run a build, and I can use the properties in the client. The details of how all this mapping and conversion of types, a string is really simple, but it gets tricky when you start thinking about dates, for example. But the framework already takes care of all of this. In contrast to all the other approaches where you produce JavaScript, for example, if you want to run that on your Android device, if you want to have an application that you want to install on an iOS device, you sort of have to take all of this and sort of compile it again and produce some Cordova thing, which you can then install. With Flex, you just say, I want to compile this for Android, and in the end, you get an APK that you can just copy to your phone and install it or shove it into the Play Store. Or for even for iOS, well, everybody says, iOS doesn't do Flash. Well, actually, it does, and most of the games available on iOS are actually based on that technology. So you can create code once and you can run it on almost any device. One really cool thing with Flex is it has a so-called skinning. I bet most of you will heard of skinning for applications, but I bet this type of skinning is rather different because it's not just changing the color, the font, or a little bit the gaps between the elements. With Flex skinning, you can provide a complete different user experience. So, for example, if you have a web application, then you have big forms for a desktop application, for example. You have big forms with lots of fields where you can enter, but if you use your phone, you have a very reduced view that even might work with wizards instead of showing everything on one page. You can really change how the thing looks. I was planning on sort of preparing a cool skin that sort of looked like the panels in Starship Enterprise. It's actually quite easy to do, but I have to admit I'm not the graphics type of guy, so I'm good in building stuff. But if it has to look nice, it's sort of, I suck with that. So I just thought, it's possible, and I'm definitely going to do it, because in my new house, I'm definitely going to have one of those panels in my hallway. So I was talking about how easy it is to set up the client-server communication. So now I'm going to show you a little bit of code fragments of how easy it really is. So assuming, I guess most of you will understand this code. I've just got a Spring service I just gave it a name, movement service. Well, in this case, it's sort of redundant, but I could have given it a different name. But I've declared a service, and for example, that has a method called stop. And I want to have this I want to be able to call this stop method on the server by pushing a button on my mobile application. So all I have to do, assuming I already created that services XML file, is add this annotation. And as soon as that's done, you can automatically see when the Spring Boot application comes up, oh, I found a service, I'm exporting that, I've registered that, okay, you're ready to go. On the client side, this is a MXML code. It's sort of a way in Flex where you can develop your UI in a declarative approach using an XML language. Here, all I do, I give this, it sort of creates a variable with a movement service name, and I tell it to call a service on the server called movement service. I give it a general fault method, so whenever anything goes wrong, it just calls on fault. And then I start declaring, well, I want to be able to stop, move forward, or get the movement state. Well, get movement state was sort of tell me the positions of each motor or give me the values of the infrared distance sensor the robot has. So, well, I just declare things there. And whenever I just call stop, please, if you get a result, call on result. If you get a result for the get movement state, for example, I call a different method. And this is how it's how it looks. For example, I am defining a button, and I'm just saying, well, if the button is clicked, please call the method on stop click. And you can see all it does is the variable I declared earlier. I'm just calling the stop method, and well, I can put code in. Everything's okay, but for the stop button, it doesn't really make sense, or simply handle errors. Are there any questions to this? So please interrupt me if I'm sort of being unclear or if you want to know anything, because I think we do have a few minutes. And what happens behind the scene is, for example, the user clicks on a button, Flex intercepts that in the callback method, and it serializes that request in the AMF protocol and sends it back to the BlazeDS server. And that's where the Spring Flex thing kicks in. It sort of decodes that request, invokes the method, and returns the result. As I said, I really like the skinning, and in contrast to well, I have to say, to any other UI-related framework I've come across, they do it by really separating the component from the visual representation. I know you'll probably say, yeah, well, that's nothing new. But in web frameworks, I've never really come across a real abstraction of the visual representation. So in Flex, for example, a button is a really, really stupid piece of code that doesn't really do anything. It just defines sort of callbacks, which the skin attaches to, and as soon as the button is pressed, the UI sort of just fires events to the basic component. Maybe a button isn't that good of an example. What would be a good example for a component that is greatly different? Let's say a checkbox. In a browser, in a normal desktop version, you simply have that checkbox. You click on that, and it sort of gets the check. On mobile phones, you usually have these slider things. So the component implementing the checkbox is identical for both. It's just a different skin put on top of that. And they're not that strict. Usually, if you start talking about model view controller and stuff like that, people start getting really fundamental. But in Flex, it's sort of the component contains the application logic. If you need any animations or pop-ups that sort of give assistance how to use the component or stuff like that, that's usually part of the UI. So you have really, really slim components that don't confuse you. Have you had a look at, for example, Angular code for a simple button? Well, it scares the hell out of me when I look at that. And if you look at Flex components, you can really concentrate on the essentials. So let's talk about my little robot. I intentionally have to shove this over here. So this is just an example of a... why doesn't it show up? I can't seem to push it over there. Yeah, so it looks a little different because it's sort of, you can see that I have the same application here on my phone, but I just put it up there so you can have a look at it. For example, I'm going to have to click stop fast enough. So the little buddy, he has a Raspberry Pi 3 in his head, and that's configured to work as an access point. So if you turn on your Wi-Fi, you'll probably see a Wi-Fi network called Rapiro. Well, that's him. And I simply connect to that with my mobile phone or my laptop, and I can immediately start communicating with him. In this case, I can show you the code that might... Wait a minute. Okay. Have to shove over the complete IDE. But I think you can't really... Well, here you can see, for example, the screen. I'll just bring the thing to the foreground. Can you read the code there? Yeah, so you can see how I did all this layouting by using the simple markup. So I've got a virtual group, a vertical group, so it's sort of positioned underneath each other. Within that, I have up here, I have that cross-like thing, so you can see the button on the top to run forward. Then I have a horizontal group with three buttons to turn left, right, and stop. So it's really nice and clean code. And can I? And here's all the logic I have to do to make him stop. I can even pass some additional parameters. So if you could you hold the microphone somewhere near to him? He's a small little guy and he doesn't have a strong voice, but... Oh well, or when he's mad. Come on. Oh well, he isn't mad at the moment. Well, maybe he's just not feeling mad. Yeah, well, I think it wouldn't be a good presentation if everything worked right away. and the thing is that I didn't just want to have him sort of have a remote control. I wanted to start giving the little buddy be a little intelligent. So what I actually did was, on top of that, in my Spring Boot application, I have a complete Akka system running, and I started to implement the communication between the IoT devices, the input from the camera, and sort of process them with Akka actors that communicate with other Akka actors, and in the end, I have some special actors that simply translate messages and send them to the client using AMF. So Mr. Assistant, could you please get the pink dragon? Yeah, as soon as you show it to him, he'll start getting all shivery. So what actually happens here is that there is an actor that's communicating with the camera. The camera is a pixie cam that sort of, it doesn't send raw image data to the client, but it sort of detects objects that it's trained on, and it likes the dragon and my little green buddies, and women in red dresses. Yesterday when I was sitting over there, I had the problem that there was this woman running around and my robot was always sort of looking after her. Well, you can get to talk with women that way, but yeah. And this camera sends out information, X and Y position of the center of something it detected, width, height, and an ID of the type of object. So the dragon is probably a 2, and the little green guys in the back, they're type 1 objects. And I think I can show you on the mobile phone. So if you, do you all see that green? So if he moves the dragon, you can immediately, I didn't really scale it that much, but do you see it? So it's just a green box, and currently he's sort of trained to focus the green box. Yeah, it's something to play around. I have to admit, I used it to sort of get started with Akka and Scala and stuff like that. I definitely noticed that one thing I'm really going to do next is, as I said, BlazeDS is a bridge between Flex and Java, but I noticed that you really get into trouble as soon as you start, if you want to return Scala case classes. They have a different convention. They don't follow the bean convention, and so it can't be serialized. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to implement a Scala adapter so you can simply directly communicate with Scala objects and services on the server, and I think I'm going to have a lot of fun with that little guy, especially creating all these little brain-like motions. So I have to focus the presentation again. So if you want to know what's inside, well, if you followed the last talk, in his shoulders there's an Arduino Uno, and he controls 12 servos. There are, well, I think 3 in each arm, plus the hand, and 2 in the feet, and he can sort of turn his hips and his head. So it's not really much what he can do, but that Arduino communicates with Raspberry Pi 3 via serial communication. I think it's really the simple serial port you had on your computer, so same protocol. It has an infrared distance sensor, so he would actually, down here, he would actually stop walking if he found out that he's going to fall off the ledge. What I noticed, I had an Intel Edison inside him when I went to Vancouver, but I had a lot of problems with this Intel Edison because it started decaying and more subsystems shut down. So he was able to talk, but he wasn't able to listen. He couldn't tell his position anymore, so I finally gave up on the Edison and put in the Raspberry, and had a lot less problems with that. The thing is, it has an audio out on board, but it has to be totally silent, and you have to put your ear really close to it to actually hear something. So I added a little audio amplifier that's sort of stuck in his brain, and that's why you can hear him. The operating system of the Raspberry is the plain old Raspberry. It's running on an Oracle 1.8 JDK. I'm using Scala 2.11.8. Spring Boot is running on Jetty. We could run it on Tomcat, but I've had better experience with the streaming connection with Tomcat. I don't know what's wrong with the Tomcat adapter, but sort of it loses the connection every now and then. So I made Jetty the default for the Spring Boot starter. The Spring application is a Spring 4.3 application using Spring Boot, Spring Flex, and Spring Scala. That's some really strange framework, but I think it allows me to configure my actors using Spring. So I said that I have actors that interface with the hardware. So I wanted to be able to develop on my laptop and test the application there and have it work when I run on the robot. So I sort of abstracted the connection to the IO2E hardware. So if I start the application on my laptop, it will immediately detect, oh, I'm not on IO2E hardware, so I'll run in simulation mode. And all of my services that I communicate with run in some pre-recorded, they just play back recorded data that I did in the real mode. So I am able to sit in an airplane and sort of code my robot, and as soon as I upload it to it, it starts working. And in order to be able to do dependency injection in Akka, I need a Spring Scala. In order to communicate with the IoT hardware, there's a quite good library called Pi4J. It sort of takes away the hassle of doing the real Java native interface calls to sort of communicate on an I2C bus or the camera that communicates using SPI. I said I've got a serial connection to the Arduino, so coding all of that would be really a lot of work. The Pi4J library did that quite nicely. And everything that I do, I said I'm a total open source enthusiast. If you're interested in it, I've got the entire project on GitHub. It consists of the sketches you need for the Arduino, because I modified the firmware that sort of came with the raw robot. It's the client, so the mobile front end, as well as the server back end. So actually, if you got one of those, all you need to do is clone it, build it, have fun with it. So it was a real fun project. I started that because I was sort of losing fun in my job. You know, going to office every day and having the same stupid problems every day. I wanted something that sort of gives me the fun back. So I just, here's a picture of the Arduino, the Arduino. As Justin said, they come in all shapes and sizes. So I think the chip's here. And you can see some, because the servos need some, you can see the pins here. So you sort of plug in all the servos and has some amplifiers here because the servos need a little more power than the typical Arduino would serve. The camera isn't a standard camera, so I couldn't just sort of screw it in. If I could have used a Raspberry Pi Cam, I think it's called, but I didn't want to do that, so I had to construct my own carrier for that camera. So it's always good to have a designer owes you a few favors. So we managed to construct the carrier for the camera, and that's how it looks when it's mounted. So that's also why you can't see, the eyes aren't bright blue everywhere, because, well, we have these parts where the board of the camera is sort of overlapping. This is what you see when you attach the camera inside his head with a USB cable to a laptop computer. You see the image plus the detected object, so you can just see, ah, he detected him as a type 2 there and there. And he sends, as I said, he sends back the width and height as well as the X and the Y position. And it makes processing this a lot easier. At first I was thinking of sort of using a normal webcam and then using, what's it called, OpenCV? But if you've ever had it, do you know what that is? It's sort of an image processing 3D thing. So you could do 3D detection with that, but I think his little brain would explode if I started doing stuff like that on it. So I thought this is the most easy way to sort of have something that reacts on his environment, and you can play with it. Yeah, this is how he looks in the inside. So you can see here's the Pi Cam that's connected with the Raspberry using SPI. That's a 4-channel serial bus. Here in the top I have the little amplifier. It was a lot more complicated with the Edison because I had to sort of build a sound card. There wasn't any available for Edison. I was really unhappy that I had to take it out, but oh well. So I was planning on sort of going more into an interactive mode because I still think we have a few minutes, don't we? Yeah. So do you have any questions or? Well, I really hope you have questions. Did you understand what I was talking about? Yeah.
So first of all, thank you for this. It was really interesting. But I understand this is kind of a toy, okay?
Yeah.
So my question is, what is your message to us? So what is that for?
Yeah.
Where can I use
well,
it?
Well, I'd give you two answers on that. On the one side, yes, it is a toy. But for example, I just had a... we're going to start on a project that actually uses what's inside him. And we're going to control huge conveyor belts and do some really big data information gathering. So the IoT part itself, it is a toy, but you can upscale every subsystem it's communicating with to other territories. And well, I basically built this because I was sort of, I think I was in the 5th or 6th IoT talk where they explained really great software concepts, and in the end there was just an LED that sort of lit up, and I thought, yeah, well, if I complain about that all the time, I should sort of produce something that's different. And on the other side, most of the available IoT projects, they really lack when it comes to the front end part. There is a lot of sort of UI related frameworks for IoT, but they usually have really big problems if you want to change something. So if I decided that I would like to have my panel in my near the door that should look sort of like a panel in the enterprise, well, I can use Flex or I just forget about that. And with Flex, I have the flexibility to do whatever I want, and I just wanted to show you how easy it is. Well, the UI wasn't good that I did. I said I can do things that they work, but if they have to look pretty, well, I have to go to someone else.
Thanks.
Yeah. Any other?
Oh, well. And I guess we play for 5 minutes more with the machine.
Oh, well, then we'll just finish a little earlier. Well, then, thank you for listening. Come on, what's wrong? Oh, gee. Ah, he's seeing the dragon. He can't. He's always distracted when he sees the dragon. Yeah, I don't know why he's not saying that. Yeah, as soon as he sees the dragon, he sort of starts focusing. Yeah, now he saw the green guys. No, he won't sing. Oh, well. I think I have to look into the logs. Yeah, I like that Dalek sample so much. He does have a problem. I had to buy that pink dragon because I had these little green guys, and I worked on him in the office. And then one day we got new furniture for the office. And all chairs were green. So it was totally impossible to work on the robot without getting something that has a color that probably none of my colleagues will be wearing. Yeah, I had to add some layers of smoothing. And he's the area of visibility is sort of down. Yeah. I never tried it, but I just did an estimate on the CPU power you need to do that. And even if the Raspberry Pi would have enough CPU power, but it would drain the batteries far too much. Usually I would have him run on batteries, but I have to admit, since I have him on the cord, it all was really working nicely.
I think in the next year you can use GPU power.
CV. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't have a GPU. Yes, it does. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to admit, another reason for me not using it was that I had a look at it, and it looked really, really, really complicated.
It's Broadcom's product, and it's still closed source, but I think in the next year they will make it open source.
Okay, that sounds good.
We are doing a lot of things with Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, okay. So I hope it was a little interesting.